Hello there. Today is Thursday, August 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, a community remembers a young woman killed over the weekend in a racially charged rally.
Say to yourself, what can I do to make a difference? And that's how you're going to make my child's death worthwhile.
The U.S. in turmoil over race relations as outrage continues over President Trump's statements. Millions of Americans are preparing to watch a rare total eclipse. Also ahead, remembering the king of rock and roll, Elvis Presley. It's all on today's International Edition. Huge crowd carrying candles and singing filled the streets of downtown Charlottesville, Virginia, Wednesday night for a vigil for 32-year-old Heather Heyer, the woman killed when a Nazi sympathizer allegedly ran her down with his car last Saturday. Heyer was one of hundreds of counter-protesters marching against a white supremacist rally in the southern college town. Friends, family, and mourners gathered early Wednesday for a memorial service for Heyer. Her mother, Susan Breaux, struck a defiant tone, telling the crowd her daughter's death would only serve to amplify her message.
And I think the reason that what happened to Heather has struck a chord is because we know that what she did is achievable. We don't all have to die. We don't all have to sacrifice our lives. They tried to kill my child to shut her up. Well, guess what? You just magnified her.
Heather's father also spoke.
I came here today and I was overwhelmed. At the rainbow of colors in this room. That's how Heather was. It didn't matter who you were or where you were from. If she loved you, that was it. You were stuck. So for that, I'm truly proud of my daughter.
Also in attendance, Senator Tim Kaine. He referred to Virginia's troubled history with race relations as he addressed reporters.
Virginia is a place of scar tissue, folks. We've experienced hatred. We've experienced division. We've experienced racism. That is a sad but undeniable part of our history. But we've come a long way. We've come a long way under enlightened leadership. We've come a long way fighting back the divisions and bigotries of past eras.
Kaine, also, who also served as governor, said the Commonwealth of Virginia and the town of Charlottesville have put away the evils of the past.
And there are people who want to bring us back to it. Many of them who are not even from the Commonwealth, but they want to haul us backward. But what Heather's life shows, what this community shows, what Virginia shows is we're not going back. We will not go back to days of hatred and bigotry and division. We're not going back. And no matter who tries to take us back, or no matter who emboldens those who would try to take us back, we are not going backwards.
He also criticized the leadership of President Donald Trump, saying bigots have been emboldened by the president's mixed messages on the tragedy. Well, President Trump continues to face a barrage of criticism for his contention that both white supremacists and counter-protesters were to blame for the deadly violence. Wednesday, the president announced that he'd dissolved two business advisory committees composed of top American corporate executives after at least seven CEOs announced they were resigning from the councils because of his remarks. And as the violence unfolded last Saturday, Trump initially blamed it on many sides. But Monday, he condemned the neo-Nazis, white supremacist and racist Ku Klux Klan for their role in the unrest. Then, on Tuesday, at a news conference at his Trump Tower in New York, Trump reverted to his initial assessment of the violence that killed one woman and wounded 19 others. And joining me now to discuss is Tehama Lopez-Benyasi, assistant professor of conflict and resolution at George Mason University in the U.S. state of Virginia. So thank you for being with us. Are you surprised at the rise in white supremacist rallies taking place here in this country?
I'm not surprised. All kinds of white supremacists, call them white nationalists, neo-Nazis, but the dominant ideology here that binds them together is the idea that white people are superior, either biologically, culturally, somehow more deserving, natural leaders, whatever it is, and that, you know, they are the people who should be in charge. And these groups have been around for centuries, some of them maybe this past century, the neo-Nazis certainly after World War II, but it's been since the Civil Rights Movement that they've taken mostly to the shadows. And in the past, I'd say 15-plus years, they've really exploded on the Internet. So where you may not see the type of congregations publicly of groups like the Klan, for example, and they've had their protests, but they can congregate online and they can grow online.
President Trump held a news conference like none I've ever seen. Apparently his aides didn't know he was going to take questions. Can you give me some perspective on what you make of all of that, the comments that he made?
You know, it is very hard to make sense of many things that he says. I mean, he is truly right off the cuff. He surprises, it seems like, everyone who's around him. Altogether, he's always a Trump supremacist. He thinks he is the best thing since sliced bread. And within, you know, that Trump supremacy, he doesn't have a challenge against, you know, white supremacy. He doesn't have a challenge against sexism or ableism. He's the possessor of great privilege, and he is not the defender of any kind of minority in this country.
The president did say he believed that there was less racism since he's taken office in this country. It doesn't seem to match some of the statistics of some of the watchdog groups that have been doing some analysis on that.
Well, I was taking a look at FBI statistics, and the numbers for like single bias incidents have seemed to kind of, I mean, sometimes in some cases they've declined since 2010 from like near 7,000 to like 5,800 in 2015. That's the most recent full reports. But we know, maybe in an unofficial capacity, that there have been all kinds of incidents in 2016 and, you know, in the years of the campaign and election. And what's notable, I think, and what's important is that we've seen a slight decrease in the kinds of anti-black hate crimes from, you know, the mid to lower 60% to below 50%, which means that there are more incidents against people of, you know, Latino descent, people who, you know, would be categorized as Asian descent, but mainly they're talking about, you know, people who might be read as Arab or Muslim. So the kinds of hate is probably being more widely dispersed, but always with the most against blacks.
It's interesting because, you know, the president of the United States also, you know, he has a daughter that's Jewish, a son-in-law that's Jewish, and yet he seemed to indicate in his press conference that the reason he didn't come out stronger and say more during his first statement was that he didn't have all the facts. But there were clearly swastikas being held and people chanting anti-Semitic comments.
I think what's plain and simple to, I think, most decent people who believe in equality, they recognize those things as, you know, malicious. I don't think he does, especially since he's been, you know, the proponent, really, you know, of the birtherism against Obama. He does not care at all about what these comments that he says about Muslims, about immigrants, generally about Mexicans. He's not concerned. I mean, he has such a gut reaction to the most ridiculous things, like, you know, bad-mouthing somebody like, you know, an actress or something, right, like Meryl Streep. But he doesn't have a gut reaction to white supremacy.
Do you think this has always been brewing in our country, the white supremacy, but that they're somehow feeling emboldened and coming out, or do you think that they're recruiting more people?
White supremacy has been, as an ideology, has been, I'd say, alive and well. It just depends on, you know, how public it's been. But, you know, for most of our history, it wasn't even like a question about whether or not white people were better. That really does come into question with the Civil Rights Movement a little bit beforehand. But I think what's happening is, like, you know, you're seeing a big split, and we've seen this in the United States, you know, along partisan lines, is that you have probably more aggressive and more successful recruiting strategies for this, now we're calling it the alt-right, but, you know, white supremacist faction. But we're also seeing, I think what's interesting, is more and more white people who are, you know, publicly protesting against these groups and who are, you know, in some way trying to become supporters of, you know, Black Lives Matter and in support of immigration reform. And so I think it's an interesting time to study whiteness because there's like this cleavage that's occurring. It's along lines of racial ideology. Do you believe in white supremacy and think that this is the way that, you know, the United States should continue to be? Because this is what we've been fighting against for several decades. We're going through some really interesting growing pains in this country. And the sad part about that is that the people who are taking up the opposite sides, there seem to be very little place for discourse. And I'm afraid that when you lose space for discourse, that you give probably a disproportionate amount of space to the possibility that people will take violence against each other. I don't want to see that in my country.
All right. Well, I don't think any of us do. Tehama Lopez-Benyasi, Assistant Professor of Conflict and Resolution at George Mason University, thank you for your time. Turning now to what's trending on social media, we're joined by Andrew Palchewski. Hey, Andrew, what's going on?
Well, we have two follow-ups to stories that we've talked about in the past couple days.
Okay.
First is a follow-up to President Obama's tweet. He tweeted out about the protests going on in Charlottesville. We said that tweet was rapidly becoming one of the most popular tweets ever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now it is the most liked tweet ever.
Whoa.
It surpassed a tweet by Ariana Grande, the singer, sent out after the attack outside her concert in Manchester in the UK. Ariana Grande's tweet had 2.7 million likes. President Obama's tweet surpassed that, and not only did it surpass that, kept going. It's nearing 4 million likes. So
wow.
A lot of people rallying around this on social media.
That's
and
incredible.
It's become kind of a way for people to express
right.
their opposition and abhorrence to the white supremacy, the neo-Nazis, and it's going on in Charlottesville. So this has really gone viral in the biggest way as a way of people to really express this and express frustration and anger and sadness by endorsing, liking, and retweeting this tweet, Amanda.
And that tweet, by the way, a quote from Nelson Mandela.
Yes, the quote is, "No one is born hating another person because of the color of their skin or his background or his religion." And actually, that's one of three tweets that the president, former president, sent out. He continued that quote on. It goes on for a little longer. And each of the subsequent tweets have over 1 million likes and over 350,000 retweets for each of them.
Anything else happening?
Yeah, another follow-up to a story that we talked about, which was the doxing, as they call it. It's when people can find your information online and
mm-hmm.
release it publicly. So we talked about how white supremacists were being doxed, having their information released after those rallies in Charlottesville when they were identified in those photos. Well, now social media companies are actually stepping up and they're helping to fight white supremacy and racism and all of these ugly things online. But they're doing it in a bit of a more structured way than people doxing and releasing information. And social media companies like Facebook and Reddit have both announced that they're removing neo-Nazi and white supremacist content. They're removing links to content that is racist from their sites. So they're taking a big step up to remove hate speech. Of course, this is something we've talked about more in a terrorism context. People trying to use social media to recruit or get other people to involve themselves in terrorism overseas. This is an instance where they're confronting hate speech here in the United States. And it's interesting, not just with the timing of what happened in Charlottesville, but a new report from a professor at Virginia Tech saying that online rhetoric, particularly on social media, is actually contributing to the rise of hate groups and violence in real life. So perhaps stopping that at the source with social media will stop it from spreading, stop these groups from rallying and getting together. This is something I actually talked about in my Digital Daily video series. So if our listeners want to check that out and learn more about this, they can find that at twitter.com/#VOA or facebook.com/#VOA.
All right, Andrew, thank you. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. U.S.-backed Syrian group pardons 96 IS members in Raqqa. The UN finding survivors in Sierra Leone mudslide. They say it's unlikely. California man gets life in prison for a 2014 murder of a Chinese student. And Emma Stone tops the Forbes list of the highest paid actresses. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Well, President Donald Trump says North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made a very wise and well-reasoned decision to postpone a plan to launch missiles toward the shores of the U.S. territory of Guam. Vice President Mike Pence, while giving a joint statement with the president of Chile, called on Chile and a number of other Latin American countries to break all diplomatic and commercial ties with North Korea.
We truly believe that it's imperative that the regime in Pyongyang understand that all options are on the table. The United States of America will simply not permit a rogue regime in North Korea to possess usable nuclear weapons that can reach the continental United States and threaten our people.
And while North Korea has no diplomatic offices or banking institutions in Chile, the two countries do share a trading relationship. Pence reiterated that the U.S. will do whatever it takes to prevent North Korea from achieving its nuclear goals.
We welcome the statements of the Kim regime this week with regard to Guam. But our objective is clear. It is a nuclear-free Korean peninsula. And we want the regime in Pyongyang to permanently abandon its nuclear and ballistic missile programs and ambitions, and we'll continue to bring pressure to bear till we achieve that goal.
Well, China, North Korea's economic lifeline and its own only major ally, is telling Pyongyang and Washington that both should, quote, hit the brakes on the bellicose threats they may have or they have made against each other in recent days and weeks. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
VOA's International Edition continues. The Sun, Moon, and Earth will line up perfectly in the cosmos on August 21st, turning day into night for a few wondrous minutes, its path crossing the U.S., from sea to shining sea for the first time in nearly a century. It'll be watched by millions. Joining me for more on this special event of a total eclipse is NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. Greg, this does not happen often, does it?
For any one particular spot on the Earth, it's an average about once every 350 years a total solar eclipse will be available or visible. But the thing that makes this eclipse on August 21st in the United States so unique is two things. One, it is totality is going to last from the time the moon's shadow comes onto the continent in Oregon to when it exits the state of South Carolina. And during that 4 hours of totality, it's estimated as much as over 200 million Americans could travel and see totality. This is expected to be the most viewed eclipse in all of history.
Wow, fascinating. So where exactly will it be visible?
There are 14 states that have totality passing through them. And as I said, it starts in Oregon, leads its way on down, and your listeners can go to nasa.gov and click on the links that are up there about the eclipse. One thing I want to say, Lori, if your listeners are traveling the United States and they think they're going to be trying to see the eclipse, they want to make sure that they buy approved solar eclipse glasses. And NASA has got a vendor list of safe and approved solar eclipse glasses. That's the only way to safely watch this eclipse site. And here's the best news, Lori. If your listeners can get to the internet or social media, NASA is going to be broadcasting live the entire eclipse from when it starts till when it finishes. And it's going to include views from the International Space Station. It's going to include views from high-altitude balloons. And my favorite, there are two WB-57 Foxtrotter F jets that are going to be flying and chasing the moon shadow. Special telescopes to observe the sun and to observe the planet Mercury. But
What about the people, like, say, here in Washington, D.C., that won't get a total eclipse? Will we still get to see something?
Yes, you will. Totality is only over 14 states, and it's a 70-mile wide swath. For everywhere else in the United States, Canada, and Mexico, it's a partial solar eclipse. In Washington, D.C., we're roughly going to be at about 85% or so. It depends on where you are. And on that NASA.gov website, they have an interactive map that you can precisely pinpoint where you are and click on where you live or are visiting, and it'll bring up how much of the sun is going to be eclipsed, what time does it start for you, when is the greatest amount of eclipse, and when does it end, how high it is in the sky. One-stop shopping for anybody who wants to see the eclipse. So we won't see in Washington, D.C., a great darkening. It's going to look a little odd. The shadow might be a little bit different, but you really have to get into the upper 90 percentile of the sun being eclipsed to start seeing brighter stars come out, being able to see the planets, and being able to see where this moon's shadow is racing across the Earth's surface to envelop you. It's really cool. And the last time that we had the eclipse coming across the entire United States, Lori, was 99 years ago, June 8th, 1918.
Wow, so this is a special thing.
Yeah, and the last total solar eclipse on the U.S. was 1979. And what makes this historic and why people are calling this the Great American Eclipse is this is the first time in American history that an eclipse is coming onto American soil, and the totality is only visible in America. That's never happened before in American history.
All right. Thanks so much for the info. That's NASA Jet Propulsion Lab Ambassador Greg Redfern. And remember, if you are nowhere near seeing the eclipse in person, you can see it at nasa.gov. Wednesday marks 40 years since the legendary King of Rock and Roll, Elvis Presley, died at his home in Memphis at the age of 42. As VOA's David Byrd tells us, fans around the world are remembering Presley, one of the pioneers of rock music.
Well, since my baby left me, well, I found a new place to dwell. Well, it's down at the end of Lonely Street, that heartbreak hotel where I'll be.
Elvis Presley took the world by storm in the 1950s, shaking and gyrating on stage, melting girls' hearts with his charismatic good looks and his curled upper lip. Elvis was born into poverty in Tupelo, Mississippi, but rose to stardom on the heels of songs like Heartbreak Hotel, Hound Dog, Blue Suede Shoes, and Love Me Tender. Elvis died of complications from drug use and heart problems on August 16, 1977. Since his death, fans have flocked to his Graceland mansion in Memphis to pay tribute to their hero. This year, fans will be able to pay nearly $29 to join the procession to the Presley family gravesite. They will also get a glimpse of the newly built entertainment complex, which replaced older exhibits featuring Elvis's cars, costumes, and memorabilia. Angela Toe is a tourist from Michigan.
It is really about the music. You know, he had so many influences. It just wasn't rock music, but it was R&B, it was blues, and he fused that naturally.
Molly Kindle and her family drove hours to see the mansion and to pay tribute to Presley.
It's crazy how busy this place is today, 40 years later. I think we probably took 4 hours to get through this tour today because of all the people. It was really nice.
Well, it's one for the morning, two for the show, three to get ready, and I go.
In Manila, the Philippines, several Elvis impersonators took to the stage to pay tribute to the music legend. Eddie Lombardo is the Elvis of Italy.
We're not trying to duplicate Elvis, because nobody can be Elvis. There's only one Elvis, you know. And well, we're trying to bring the memory of Elvis back to people. That's basically what we're doing.
Douglas Masuda, the self-described Elvis of Japan, says he hopes to communicate the spirit of Presley's music.
So you say, well, how do I feel, you know, when I sing? Well, I'm not Elvis. I don't look like Elvis. I probably don't sound like him, but I feel his song. So if I feel it, you feel it.
Bam Angping is described as a young Elvis sensation. He says that Presley was a groundbreaker for generations of artists.
Elvis kind of like banged down the door because everyone was so conservative before. You had Frank Sinatra, like you said, they were all so conservative, and then there's this guy shaking his hips. So that started everything, I think, for everyone.
Elvis Presley ranked fourth in Forbes magazine's 2016 list of top-earning dead celebrities. That's not bad, but it paled compared to another king, King of Pop Michael Jackson, who earned $825 million last year. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
With you, for I can't help falling in love with you.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been 9 years since Russia recognized the Georgian territories of Abkhazia and South Ossetia as independent states, after Russia waged a brief but deadly war with Georgia in 2008. Hundreds died and more than 190,000 people were displaced in the five-day conflict as Russian troops advanced into Georgia. Only a handful of countries recognize the so-called independence of the two Georgian territories, which in fact remain firmly under Russian economic and military control, even to the point of Moscow's integrating members of its armed forces with those of South Ossetia. The United States and Georgia consider both Abkhazia and South Ossetia to be occupied Georgian territories. The Georgian government accuses Russia of keeping Georgian farmers from their fields, isolating the people in the territories, and further violating Georgia's territorial integrity by surreptitiously advancing the administrative boundary line even deeper into Georgia. On the 9th anniversary of the Russo-Georgian War, August 8th, Russian President Vladimir Putin visited Abkhazia. While there, he claimed that Russia responsibly guarantees the security and independence of Abkhazia and expressed confidence that this will be so in the future as well. NATO's acting spokesperson Dylan White condemned Putin's visit, calling it detrimental to international efforts to find a peaceful and negotiated settlement, and emphasizing NATO's support for Georgia's sovereignty and territorial integrity. The delegation of the European Union to Georgia published a similar denunciation. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert called the visit by Putin to the occupied Georgian territory inappropriate and inconsistent with the principles underlying the Geneva international discussions to which Russia is a party. She also expressed full support for Georgia's sovereignty and territorial integrity within its internationally recognized borders. The United States, Ms. Nauert said, urges Russia to withdraw its forces to pre-war positions per the 2008 ceasefire agreement and reverse its recognition of the Georgian regions of Abkhazia and South Ossetia. In the meantime, as Vice President Mike Pence made clear in his recent visit to Tbilisi, the United States will continue to look for ways that we can strengthen Georgia, not only from the standpoint of its defense and security, but where we can strengthen Georgia economically, creating jobs and opportunity and prosperity, and strengthening the hand of Georgia so that one day Georgia can once again celebrate its historic territorial integrity intact.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.